I'm Kathy Forsty, music director at KC Cafe Radio. Today I have the pleasure of talking via Skype with a good friend and a good friend of KC Cafe Radio, Kerry Patrick Clark. Kerry has been recording and performing since the 1980s, and he's not only a masterful storyteller, but also an amazing live performer. Kerry has written and recorded 6 CDs. His newest is His Story, My Story. It's a concept album that tells the story of the most powerful, true story ever told. Kerry Patrick Clark, welcome to KC Cafe Radio.
What an honor. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Really good. How are things in Ohio?
Things are great. Oh, my gosh. It's like the most beautiful day ever today.
Really?
But life and music and family is just incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of in the awe of hanging out with you and KC Cafe fans and friends at the house concert back in March. That was just so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we loved having you here. It was great. It was a great show and a great time, and we really were glad that you finally made it up here to see us.
Oh, thanks. It was really my pleasure. It was such an honor.
Are you planning on any more tours or coming back this way anytime soon?
I'm going to be coming back in the fall. The Farm Folk Alliance Region Midwest Conference is in St. Louis this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to put together, I've got some folks out east that I'm trying to get 4 or 5 different venues to agree on a series of, 4 or 5 days, just to make it worth my traveling out there. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're far and few between places around here. So on the house concert, it was really great to finally see you live. But, I didn't realize how good you are live. You have such a good way of communicating with the crowd. And I was wondering, how did you learn to do that? Is that just something that comes naturally, or?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I did learn how to do that, but I also, I think, was taught by my music mentor, who was my 7th grade social studies teacher. So you got to imagine, when kids are in the 5th or 6th grade is typically when they start taking up an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And their passions will choose. In fact, I have this conversation with my 9-year-old son, who, his friends call, there's a cartoon on television. He will run to whatever is the coolest and most exciting at the moment. And I was explaining to him the other day, I said, when you reach a little older and you start, your passion, your heart starts to take over things that you really love,
mm-hmm.
You will jump in and start playing the guitar and choose that over the other things that might come up.
Yeah.
And so this is a really long answer. I love telling stories. So so that happened when I was in the 5th grade. I fell in love with a guitar. And my 7th grade, when I got into 7th grade, my 7th grade social studies teacher became my music mentor and was the local Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan sort of singer-songwriter guru of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the greatest things he taught me was anybody can sing a song,
mm-hmm.
but if you can journey with an audience, if you can tell a story and keep them through the roller coaster ride, ups and downs, if you will, of music and stories and comedy, you will be able to make a living doing what you do. And so honestly, I believe the reason that I make a living playing music is not necessarily, though I appreciate and hear what you're saying, that I'm a good live performer, and I hope that is true.
Oh, it's definitely true.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. But I think the reason I get to make a living is because I'm a storyteller, and I try to engage an audience, whether that's an outdoor shopping center concert series where maybe 20 people are listening, but 2,000 are walking around,
mm-hmm.
Listening over the PA, or I'm in a house concert in Lee's Summit singing to you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you did another show here at the church I go to, and I was really impressed at how, because it was sort of one of those, sort of a mall situation like you just described, where people weren't really paying attention. There's some people sitting there to listen, but there are a lot of people in the background making noise and not really paying attention. And you were able to capture everyone's attention, and get everyone to quiet down and sit down and listen to the show. And I was just like, you know, how does someone do that? I mean, I've been doing this for almost 20 years myself, and so, and I still have trouble doing that kind of thing.
You know, I think that's on the job training.
Mm-hmm.
So for, you know, when I was younger and wanted to be a full-time musician, and my parents would say, no, you got to get a real job. The only goal I had was to play music, which looked like singing in the local bar. And so, you know, you imagine, I never sang in dives or, you know, the chicken wire surrounding the stage. Mm-hmm. I sang in really nice places, Holiday Inn lounges and supper clubs. But still, you had to deal with the alcohol or the game that was on television. And so I would spend 4 hours trying to get people's attention. And I would really, honestly, I would pay attention to body language. Mm-hmm. I would pay attention to each group and each table that was there to find out what style of music, if it was country or fast or slow, that would speak to them. And I'd make a mental note.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would do this game of trying to figure people out. And it, all in the hopes of, I've spent, you know, 3 hours and 55 minutes singing your stuff. I'm going to spend 5 minutes doing mine, and hopefully the relationship that we've developed, even though you don't know that we've developed it,
yeah,
you will give me the benefit of allowing me to sing 5 minutes of my stuff. Fortunately, with age comes a little more wisdom, and you go, you know, the heck with singing other people's stuff. I want to do mine.
Right.
How can I take the tools and the gift and the comedy and weave that into some, you know, some type of show that that reaches people? And so I think it was on the job training that I sang to a bunch of drunks for mm-hmm. a long time.
Yeah, those are the funnest crowds, aren't they?
Well, yes and no. I mean, honestly, you know, my buddy has a saying, earn while you learn, which I think is kind of true. When you're singing in clubs, you're playing other people's music and you're figuring out who you are as an artist, perhaps, or mm-hmm. or who you want to be. And yeah, it's kind of all on the job training.
Yeah. So what kind of advice would you give to singer-songwriters who are having a hard time getting a crowd into a show?
Don't be caught up in you so much. You know, I've recently, I'm a pretty funny guy. I like to be jovial. I like to have fun. I love to laugh. But there was a period there for me. You wouldn't know this, but I'm going to tell you about me. There was a period there where, you know, when I did my original shows, it was all pretty serious and pretty. There was no up and down. There was no roller coaster emotional ride and breaks built in to give people's emotions a break or their minds a break. And one day I woke up just kind of looking at my life and going, why aren't my live shows like my life? How come I don't have more fun? And how come we're not laughing more?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a moment where I went, you know, you're taking yourself too seriously. So as a songwriter, you know, I think I write really good songs and I try to get all this meaning and message into three and a half minutes. And the truth is, while that's all really great, you can't play an hour and a half of stuff that is heart hitting or head hitting. You got to give people a break, including myself as a performer, you know. So to come off some serious song and tell some story about my son that created this, you know, stupid song about saving for his therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's just an emotional and mental break for people. And so I think that's the biggest gift I could give other performers or singer-songwriters, is just don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah. I think that's really good advice. I think that's true. You know, you got to be doing it for the people as much as for yourself, more probably for the audience than for yourself.
Right. Right. So, and you know, that performance at your church, which was pretty awesome, by the way, I do that a lot, where people are wandering around and they don't necessarily know that they need the music.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience is that while I engage the people that are right in front, because if you lose them first, you're screwed.
Right.
So I need to engage the people that are in the front, and then I will slowly work on making some comment or acknowledging people that are walking by, and just know that eventually they're either going to leave or they will become part of a friend club. Mm-hmm. And so either one is fine with me. So, you know, I mean, that's just, it's again, it's sort of on the job training that has allowed me not to be so full of myself that I get angry that people aren't sitting there listening to my amazing songs or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've been there and felt that. So that's why I'm laughing, because I'm kind of laughing at myself. So, but your new CD is probably the most serious CD I think you've done so far, wouldn't you say? I mean,
well, I would agree. It's not only the most serious, it could potentially be the most controversial.
Yes, yeah. I was wondering, were you afraid of alienating any of your fans by...
Oh, geez, huge. Yeah, because my language and my, you know, for those that are listening, it's, as you mentioned in the intro, it's Jesus' story. And I call myself a believer, and that's a conscious choice. Many would use the term Christian. Mm-hmm. While I don't disagree with the term Christian, I disagree and get angry with the baggage and the hurt that it has created in the world. Mm-hmm. And so, because language is so important to me, I consider myself and call myself a believer. And so when I was given these songs or asked to pay attention, and these songs started coming, for 2 years, I sat on them and had this conversation with God that sounded like, you know, all right, thanks so much for these songs, but man, I don't want to release a CD, because you know what's going to happen. All the folk people are going to go, oh, geez, he's one of those people.
Yeah, he's a Christian singer-songwriter.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I sort of struggled with that in my career. Back in the year 2000, I added my middle name and called myself a Christian singer-songwriter, and the music dried up. Mm. And so that's been part of my journey. And you know, the rest of that story is in talking to my best friend, who is a former pastor, which is a whole fascinating story in and of itself. He said one day over coffee, he says, man, what the heck is your problem? I said, well, you know, Sean, I tell people, I tell God that I'm a Christian singer-songwriter, and the music is gone. And he sits there for a minute and listens to my story, and then he says, so what makes you think God isn't in all your music? Whatever you call it, bluegrass, folk, pop, adult contemporary, or Christian. And it was like, you know, it was like God just biffed me on the head, and I went, oh, I'm the idiot here. Mm-hmm. I'm the same box that I get angry that believers or Christians put God in is the same box that I'm putting God in or putting me in. Mm-hmm. And so then that was when the walls of the box came down, and I went, I'm just writing my music and trust that God's in it, and whatever the heck he wants to do, yay, thank you so much. And so that's when all of a sudden my career, as silly as it sounds with all the things that I've done, started to take off. And six CDs later, you know, here I am with a Christian, if you will, CD, and having this conversation with God, sounding like, you know, I don't want to do this. I know you want me to, but you're going to have to help me. And you're going to have to help me with the language of people that come at me and go, you know, I disagree. And what about this? And what about, it's like, hey, man, I'm not here to judge. That's not in my character. It's not in my DNA. And I disagree with those Christians that believe that Jesus came to judge. Because mm-hmm. I don't think if he came back today and stood outside of Wendy's and said, hey, I'm buying everybody lunch. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't come in. You're not a member of the club. Right. I am not one of those people that believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that Jesus came for everybody. And so that's why the CD came out. And we get to have this conversation. So, and I know that God's in it, because if somebody is listening to this that has A, either been hurt by the church, or B, sort of on the fence with this whole Jesus thing, or C, doesn't even believe, might hear something in my sharing this story that sings truth into their heart, and that's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I like about these songs, is they kind of stand on their own. I mean, if you took them off the album and you just listen to them, you know, they don't necessarily be, you'll necessarily think, oh, this is the story of Christ, you know. You hear it, right. You just hear a nice, beautiful story, you know.
Right.
And that's what I really like about this CD as well. You don't, You know, you can take it away from the concept and still have a beautiful song. So.
Oh, thanks. I'm really happy about that. You see that and hear that. Many of the songs were purposefully written in that way.
Mm-hmm.
While it is this half of the songs actually are the story of Jesus from Palm Sunday through the resurrection. The rest of them are about a believer's journey. And so while half of them actually talk about something that happened with Jesus, you know, half of those songs kind of don't even mention his name.
Right.
Or you would know as a listener that that's what it's about, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So did you consciously write the songs that way to make them not necessarily Christian songs or religious songs?
Yes and no. So yes, part of that is that sort of inner dialogue that I often have with myself that I just had with you. You know, God is in a, whatever box I put God in, he's going to blow out the walls anyway. So, mm-hmm. you know, get off whatever box you think God's in, because my experience is going to be different than your experience, which mm-hmm. that's what I love about God. So yes, I wrote them consciously to not sound preachy. And no, I think God's spirit was in a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So what you have to know, in fact, if you buy the actual CD, if you download it, I don't think you'll find this information online, but if you buy the actual physical CD, it tells the story of this book that was handed to me by a pastor who I was invited to participate in the music for Easter services a couple of years ago and during Lent. And I'm not a book reader. I don't like books that don't have pictures in them. And so when he handed me this book, which was Adam Hamilton is the author, and he wrote this book called The 24 Hours That Changed the World. Mm. And it's the story of Jesus from the Last Supper to his death, which is 24 hours essentially. And I'm reading this book and I hear God, and I hate when people say that, because it's like, what do you mean? I didn't hear God's voice. I felt it in my heart.
Right.
And what I heard in my heart was, pay attention, there's some songs here.
Mm-hmm.
And so every week there was a brand new song that was pretty amazing. And so what I did with them is I sang them at the church each week. There were 6 or 7 weeks, and then Easter. And then I had all these songs and had this inner conversation for 2 years with God, and realized that through the years I have written many songs that deal with sort of a believer's journey. And so I took all these songs to my best friend, Sean, and I said, Sean, can you make sense of these? Because here's what I'm hearing. Here's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like I'm supposed to release a CD, and I don't even know where to start. And he took all the songs and about a day and a half later emailed me and said, well, Kerry, this is the entire, you know, and put the CD together for me the way it is. And so I just saw God in that, too, and said, well, it must be, so we got to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're talking with Kerry Patrick Clark about his CD, His Story, My Story. What was the first song that you wrote for the CD then, if it was sort of a year's long worth of writing?
Well, there's two answers to that question. One would be, let me look. One would be, I'm looking at the back of the CD and I'm trying to answer that question. You know, the oldest song on this CD and the first one that would technically have been written would have been Walk the Walk.
Mm-hmm.
That my wife and her ex-husband and I wrote for our oldest son, Mitch, who is now 26, when he was being confirmed in a local church. We all sat down and said, wouldn't it be cool if we wrote a song for our son? And so we all got together, and that was, I think, back in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm. That's a great song. I like that one, too.
Thanks. Yeah, I think that's a really cool song. But all of my story songs have been written, you know, over the last maybe 10, 15, well, 10 years. The His Story part, the first six songs on the CD were written within a 7-week period. And so the first one was probably probably You Should See This. They're probably in the order of how they were, how they appear on the CD.
Very cool. Well, Come On Rising is a beautiful song, and you use children's voices in that. How did you decide to use kids' voices, and who are the kids singing on that song?
You know, my son, who has the gift or the curse of music, is a 9-year-old blonde mini-me, and we have three boys. Two came with a marriage, and Robbie is my biological son, which has just been one of the greatest gifts ever. So I wrote this song with him in mind, you know, because I wanted to write, you know, Come On Rising is the resurrection song, although, again, you would never know it by listening to the song. And so the lyrics are kind of like a baby reaching up his arms, hoping that his father would lift him up from harm. Now, some may picture Jesus on the cross. Others, like me, picture my little boy when he was a baby reaching up going, "Daddy, lift me up." And that was kind of a lyric that I felt that God gave me, because he gave me this picture of my son reaching up for me. And I just wrote those lyrics down, kind of like a baby reaching up his arms. So it was kind of a no-brainer to go, "Hey, buddy, would you help Daddy sing on this song?" And, "Oh, yeah, Daddy." And then a couple of his friends that are in a local kids' choir, the Children's Choir of Northwest Ohio, who they are, I don't know, 60 or 70 amazingly talented kids. I got three of his friends, Drake Honecker and Chloe Rosenberger and Carolyn Hind, over to record the kids' choir part in my studio. And the kids, you know, it just was really going to be my son at first. And listening back to the track, and this was, by the way, was the last song written about a week before I had to send this CD off to the mastering plant. And so I didn't have time to teach an entire kids choir, but I did have time to teach three kids and track them like six times. So it sounds like, you know, 20, 30 kids on the album. And so that's what happened. And that's how it came out. And I that's my favorite song on the CD. I just love the song. I don't know why. It has this power in it that, you know, it's one of those songs that, as a songwriter, I've always wanted to write. That it's very simply produced, but there's some sort of power in the song that I just really, really love.
Yeah, there's a magic there somehow. I mean,
I'm glad you hear that. Some people listen to it and go, "I don't get it, Carrie." My best friend Sean, you know, he listened to it and go, "Carrie, I don't hear what you're hearing, but whatever."
I disagree. It's you know, it's one of those songs. I mean, when I finished listening to the CD, it was like the one song that I was like humming after it was over. So.
Oh, very cool. And, that's, you
know,
so cool.
And you know, Robbie's got a big career ahead of him, because he sings really well. And a lot of times you hear children's voices on CDs and it's almost cringeworthy, but with his voice, it's like, it's beautiful.
It is honest to goodness. It's a gift or a curse.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what and or which. As a father, I'm certainly willing to participate and grow him if he wants to in music. And if he has passions in some other arena or area, I will absolutely support him in that. But, you know, when he was probably 6 months old, I think I told you this, when we were chatting before the house concert, he was 6 months old, sitting in his little bassinet sort of, you know, car seat thing. And I'm rocking him, and I'm playing the guitar, and this stinking kid starts humming along in the key that I'm playing. And I just stopped and marveled at this and thought, well, that's either a weird coincidence or a gift. And so I changed keys and started playing a different song. And son of a gun, if this kid didn't start humming in that key. And I just went, oh, thank you so much.
That's very cool.
And so he's been around music and recorded, you know, he recorded when he was 3 years old, for gosh sakes.
Wonderful. Another song I like a lot is One Kiss. That's sort of Judas's song.
Yeah, that's right.
How, you know, and it's a song that, you know, most people look at Judas as the villain of the Christ story, but you almost have a more of a sympathetic take to that in that song.
Boy, I'm like honored that you have such insight in these songs. That's really cool. And I would expect nothing less.
I'll try to meet your standards.
So if you knew me, if you really knew me, you would know that I have this, you know, this devil on one shoulder and this angel on the other. And so for me, the way I have a logical conversation, it's sort of like a head-heart conversation. Mm-hmm. And so the head would be sort of the ego talking about me, me, my. And the heart is more about God or the spirit or the community or the connectiveness of people and the way things are supposed to be. So that's sort of the ongoing conversation that I have a lot in my life. And I think that's also a conversation that we as humans have, believer or not. There are things that we have to deal with that, simply put, is either fear-based or love-based. Mm-hmm. So hence the head heart, you know, fear versus love or angel versus devil on the shoulder. And so I look at this story with Judas in the Garden of Gethsemane, and I can't, it's not that I necessarily sympathize with him. I have been him.
Yes.
And I think all of us have been him. There are times that we look back on our lives once we mature, hopefully, which might be a challenging statement for guys because, you know, it took me marriage and a child to start growing up. Anyway, I think if you just look at the story from that perspective, it is just a fear or love-based conversation. And again, I consciously chose not to write the story about, and then Judas did this, and then Jesus did this, because I didn't want to alienate people. I wanted to bring them into the story, because I believe there are times in all of our lives that we've been Judas, and there are times in all of our lives that we've been Jesus. And so, you know, imagine this scene from a story. The writer has set the stage, the voices of good versus evil, the power of love against rage. Well, I can't even think of the lyrics without singing it. So, but that's how, and the only part of the story that you get a glimpse that it has anything to do with Judas is that sort of bridge that goes, what is the bridge? Silver shiny, head leads blindly, heart wants to be saved. Swords are drawing, one ear falling, one kiss and betrayed. If you didn't even know the story, you wouldn't know that's about Judas and Jesus.
Right.
If you heard the story, then you would go, oh yeah. But yeah, that's a real conscious song about, I didn't want that to be about the betrayal. I wanted, hopefully, to write a song that we could all put ourselves in the midst of.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we're all sinners and we're all saints in some ways. And that's really the struggle that all of us have inside of us. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So are you planning on playing any of these songs at churches and going around maybe touring with us next Easter or...
Yeah, that's the plan. The you know, typically when I do a CD release, I get the guys together who played on the CD, and we have a big band concert release. And last couple times we've done it at the church that I mentioned earlier, which seats, I don't know, 400 or 500 people, which has been a great venue. But the reason I didn't do it this time is I needed to create a show that I could take to churches, and that was the whole plan. So yes, this will be touring next Easter, and it's a visual audio concert. It's a one person show, if you will. And so I've taken the Mel Gibson movie, The Passion of the Christ, and edited scenes of that go along with the songs. And so there's a, you know, it's a part A and a part B, if you will, just like his story, my story. I can tell the story of Jesus, but in the first part, his story, but the story doesn't stop there. And what do you do with that story? And so that becomes my story. and share my struggle and my fears and my the choices of love, the moments of love that I've had in my life. And that's just a conversation. And much like the Casey Cafe house concert that I did, it's sort of a story song, you know, a little more real than a scripted program.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, you know, I listened to this CD and I literally cried after I listened to it, because it really opened my heart and my mind to look at the Passion of the Christ in a new way. I mean, I never really saw it relating to my own life until after I really listened to this CD. So I was extremely touched by it, and you did a great job. So
thanks so much. That's very sweet of you to say. Thank you.
So you said, well, you're going to be touring again maybe next year, or are you and you're touring this fall, and then you're going to go out on tour with this, and next year around Easter, will you be coming this way again, or?
Hopefully will, yeah. You know, the minute you start going out, you meet more people, and then you connect, and more people want things. And so, yeah, absolutely want to come your way during Advent or the pre-Easter season, and would love to connect and do some shows out there again.
Great. Well, we'll be glad to have you.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Well, Carrie, I appreciate you talking with us today. Is there anything else you wanted to mention, or have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I just want to thank you for, you know, this sounds patronizing, and I don't mean it so. I just really appreciate what you and Kathy and Jeff have done for Casey Cafe Radio, and more importantly for independent singer-songwriters that are trying to get their stuff out there, that are just, you know, that are really good. I listen to the station often and go, my gosh, why aren't these people signed? And yay that they're not, because we live in a time that, you know, I'm talking to you on Skype, and somebody listening this might have their ear or their heart or their head moved and log onto my website or download my stuff from iTunes. I mean, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do, I just really want to say thank you for creating an opportunity for my music and people like me, their music, to get out into the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Like I think I've told you before, you know, we do that just for that reason, that we think there's a lot of great music out there that just doesn't have a chance to get heard. And that's really why we started Casey Cafe Radio, so good music could get heard again on the radio. So
yay.
Well, your new CD is called His Story, My Story, and it's available at www.carriepatrickclark.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can also download it on iTunes. Is that true?
That is correct. Yep.
So definitely check that out. And you're on Facebook as well, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of everywhere. Reverb Nation and Facebook and Twitter and MySpace. Just look for Carrie Patrick Clark on all those different sites. I have a YouTube channel as well, which is, you know, everything is .com/Carrie Patrick Clark typically. Facebook and YouTube and MySpace and all that stuff.
Yeah, just Google the name and you'll find a bunch of stuff.
yeah, and probably stuff. Well, never mind.
We won't go there.
Talk about that.
that's the devil side of things. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, maybe that's the next CD.
Well, Carrie, thanks again for talking to us, and we're looking forward to seeing you again pretty soon.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Kathy.